This is part four of a five-part series on the life of Florence Nightingale. In part four, Florence Nightingale formulates and publishes her famous Notes on Nursing. At long last, the war was over, and Florence Nightingale could return to England. Though she lived another 35 years, her health was never as good as before her having been stricken with the Crimean fever. She never appeared in public again. A testimonial was presented to her by the English public in the form of £50,000, which became the foundation of the famous Nightingale Fund. With this fund, Florence Nightingale was able to realize her lifelong dream, establishing a school for nursing. The school opened in 1860 as an entirely independent educational institution financed by the Nightingale Fund. Her school raised nursing from degradation and disgrace to the rank of a respectable occupation for women. Graduates of the Nightingale School were sent to foreign lands, carrying with them her teaching, thus transforming healthcare around the world. Florence Nightingale wrote many treatises and books about her ideas, most notable among them, her Notes on Nursing, published in 1859. In her Notes on Nursing, Florence Nightingale was very clear to distinguish between the role of the nurse and the role of the physician.
Of my years, I felt that common sense and the highest compassion and respect for spiritual guidance seemed to make the best nursing protocol. It makes one sensitive to the wounded and the ill, caring to the elderly, gentle with the children, and invested in the process of healing, acting and being ever aware of the powerlessness of the sick, of the helpless and unending pain of those inflicted with disease. Oh, yes, that is the essence of good nursing. Clean air, clean water, light and color. All the senses come into play when one is left. When one is left of only experiencing the physical essence of life. But in all of my years of developing these theories, there was no place in the existing medical practice for the considerations that I took so seriously. And since nursing had been reduced to only changing poultices and bandages, to emptying bedpans, a distinction had to be made between the role of the physician and the nurse, one that I thought was so obvious. You see, the nurse spends hours and hours with these patients, hours observing every single moment of their process in order to really understand their condition, in order to prevent infection. The only relationship a nurse should have to infection is one of prevention. But in all of these hours of observation and of tending to needs, of protecting the patient and putting the patient in the best possible position for nature to act upon him, again the question was, and what is the difference between the role of the physician and that of the nurse? And I have always said that the surgeon may come in and save the patient's life, but it is the nurse, that helps that patient to live.
Florence Nightingale recognized the importance of the environment on the recovery of the patient. Aspects of the environment such as good lighting, fresh air, surrounding the patient with beauty, protecting the patient from noise, all of these factors were recognized as being extremely important in the recovery and the healing of the patient.
The patient itself will interact with the patient's condition and create its own symptoms. If we do not pay great attention to every single detail, I have said often that without cleanliness, good ventilation is practically useless. I've also said, what is the difference, I ask? What is the difference between a prison cell and a patient's room if the yellow walls that surround them are ever unchanging? What is that difference? Do we assume the mind is incarcerated with disease and does not require tending a variety and beauty? The kind of beauty that is ever life-giving when we are well, are we not so required of it when we are ill? Then I think, why was it so surprising that I said that any sense of expectation and concern is potentially damaging to the patient? That all of the patient's energy must be focused into restoring his body into a state of health, for that is the essence of disease. It is a restorative process. So expectation and worry, surprise, all of those should be minimized if not avoided. And then the need for beauty. Even in my own illness, the sight of fresh flowers, along with the light, the glorious light of day, were as critical to me. For we know not why form and color are themselves healing and therapeutic. But indeed, we see it daily that patients that are exposed to the glories of God, of nature, of light and fresh air, all of those patients thrive and do far better than those who are incarcerated in the dungeons of disease and in environments that lack any essence of living.
Then as now, patients in hospitals are subjected to stressful conditions, particularly conversations which can cause stress. Conversations between the doctor and the patient, or between the doctor and the nurse, or between the patient and visitors. Florence Nightingale was very clear in what should be done in such a situation.
The visitor of whom I speak. You know of the one who comes in with all due concern for our patient. It might be a relative or a dear friend who comes in and speaks of another individual who lives in an entirely different location with different symptoms of a different age, of a different upbringing, in different circumstances, whose symptoms do not even at all remotely resemble that of this patient, as if All of this information is of some concern and relevance. At all. We must protect the patient from such a distraction. For in a state of illness, the mind tends to play a role of confusion. The patient may somehow deduce there is a message and equate something to his own condition that is not of any meaning whatsoever. Oh, yes, the other individual, who I find to be equally dangerous to the well-being and emotional security of our ill one, is what I call chattering hopes. You know of whom I speak again. The individual who comes in with a bright smile on his face, talking of going dancing 3 months hence, when the patient has just had his two legs amputated. Oh, how appalling! Such ill respect, as if the patient has neither the capacity nor the knowledge to understand his own condition. Oh, yes. We must respect the patient's ability to not only understand his own condition, but to respond with God-given strength in using well the powers that remain. I am equally critical of the nurse and physician who speak just beyond earreach of the patient, who is straining ever diligently to hear any word whatsoever about his own condition. How rude and unprofessional we are to cause the patient to strain to hear our every word. I have been also concerned that when we talk to the patient about their condition, bring them honesty without judgment. Bring them words and clarity and speak to them without them having to even raise their neck or eyes or strain their back to see you. Do not speak to the patient from their back, for that has caused folds in so many numerous conditions that I no longer can count. All of these details must be tended to, and if one is not willing to do so, one should not be a nurse.
This concludes part 4 of Florence Nightingale in her own words. Continue with part 5 as Florence Nightingale discusses her legacy and the future of nursing.